Good day, everyone. This is March Twisdale, producer and host of Prose, Poetry, and Purpose. And I'd like to welcome you to my interview with Vashon Islander Stephen Silla. Stephen, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, March. It's a delight.
I know. Seriously, it is. Okay, so today we're recording in the Voice of Vashon studio up at the top of the island at Sunset Ridge. But soon my show will air live from the brand new storefront studio in downtown Vashon, which was made possible through the support of our underwriters and a grand cast of VOV volunteers who contributed their enthusiasm, vision, and hard work to that endeavor.
No kidding.
I know, seriously.
VOV has done so much for this island. It's great.
Oh, I am endlessly, like literally every day, I just feel lucky to live on Vashon. Mm. And then I think about this incredible radio station and the fact that I get to do a show here. And it's, yeah. So really quickly, we're going to go ahead and actually give thanks to one of our underwriters, the Vashon Loop. VOV support is provided by the Vashon Loop, Islanders' alternative newspaper offering free news, information, arts, and entertainment from, quote, the people since 2001. It's your chance to get into the loop at www.vashonloop.com. Okie doke. So now let's dive into today's show. Stephen, you are my first guest journalist and filmmaker.
All right.
I know. I'm excited. I'm used to interviewing people who write books. This will be a whole nother experience.
Well, I kind of walk between worlds, and journalism, film, poetry, it's all part of ways of expressing.
Right. And so let's see here. We have a lovely list of things we're going to cover. Essentially today, we are coming together to explore something called Big Joy. So tell us about Big Joy.
Well, Big Joy is a movie. It's a website. It is a project that is dedicated to, we had a little chart on our wall that said the purpose, the Big Joy Project is about inspiring people to follow their own weird.
Right.
To create more joy in the world using the life and work of poet and filmmaker James Broughton,
mm-hmm.
who lived from 1913 to 1999, and who I met first through his films at the Museum of Modern Art in New York, and then 10 years later, I met him at a radical fairy gathering at Brighton Bush Hot Springs.
Oh, I love Brighton Bush!
And he ended up moving to Port Townsend right about that same time. So
wow.
He and I became friends. He became a mentor of mine. And after he died, I thought, because I have been a writer most of my life, that I would write a book about him. But I realized that since he was a filmmaker, he made 23 experimental films and also wrote 23 books of mostly poetry,
mm-hmm.
that I needed to make a film.
Right.
So I called my friend Eric Slade, who had made a beautiful documentary about Harry Hay, another gay pioneer.
Mm-hmm.
And Eric said, I'd be happy to help you make this film as long as I don't have to raise any money.
Right.
So Vashon was the perfect place to work on this film because we share lots of creative energy and spirit with San Francisco and Port Townsend, which were the two places James Broughton lived.
Well, and was it France for a period of time?
He did. He went to Europe during the McCarthy era and lived in England and France.
Right.
So, yeah, intercultural life that was a story that I really, really wanted to tell.
Right. Yeah, I mean, anyone who has lived, like, you know, Laura Ingalls was the late 1880s through 1950s, right? You know, 13 to 90. I mean, anyone who lived during that period of time, it was just, oh my gosh, what a life to lead.
What a
period. We're never going to get to the moon. Poof, we're on the moon. I mean, it's
the
like,
20th century was pretty astounding, and he lived most of it.
Yeah.
But I only knew him for the last 10 years of his life when he was kind of a jolly old man. And so making this movie, I found out this whole story about the San Francisco Renaissance, the time after World War II, when there was all this creative ferment going on in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so wonderful to be able to interview people like Lawrence Ferlinghetti and Anna Halperin, mm-hmm. who were part of that. I mean, Anna in the 40s, Lawrence in the 50s, but just amazing. Most of them are gone now.
Right.
So, but we did, we ended up interviewing 39 people for this film, but we only used 20 in the mm-hmm. final film.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, yeah, when all films, right? You have to cut down to, that must be sort of an agony almost, having to choose what to cut out.
It's like killing your children. It's really difficult. It's really difficult.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
okay.
We always looked at it as a multimedia project. So the film
right.
is part of it.
Right.
But we also have the website, and we've been mm-hmm. inspiring and encouraging people to make their own mini documentaries of their own poetry or James Broughton's poetry. We've been encouraging people to have salons where they read poetry to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's
well,
really
and you
about...
have the bookmarks, postcards. I mean, you have all that type of taking it out to the people in a way.
Right.
You know, carrying that beautiful mess. I have several of them that are taped up on the wall near my kitchen at home so the kids can see them when they walk by because they're so inspirational.
Follow your own weird.
And then there's the soundtrack
yes.
for the person who just wants to listen in the car on the way to work, right?
It's true. And the soundtrack actually includes some poetry that's not in the film.
Oh, nice. Oh, of course. Duh. That makes sense. Okay, so you know what, everyone? We're going to dive right in here, actually, because we have... So this soundtrack is really cool. It's a mixture of... It says renowned composers, Jamie...
Sieber. And Evan Schiller.
And Jamie used to live on the island?
Yes, Jamie Yay! Lived on the island in the 80s.
Vashon Magic. Okay, so there's original music in here, and then there's also... readings of the poetry by James Broughton himself.
Exactly.
All right, well, let's hear number two here.
Here's him telling his own story.
All right, there you go.
I am.
Oh, I don't think I pressed Q hard enough. All right, let's try it again.
Okay.
Oh, I pressed play.
Oops.
That's what I did wrong. All right, so here we go.
I am the I am that I am. I am a third-generation Californian. My great-grandfather was a scout with Fremont. My grandmother was born in the Mother Lode. My aunt was elected to the state legislature. When the sun was in Scorpio, the moon in Aries, and the cusp of Virgo and Libra rising in 1913, I was born in the San Joaquin town of Modesto. I am an Anglican by birth, a Taoist by nature, a Dionysian in spirit, an Apollonian in practice. I like hijinks and low dives, old wine and new faces, top drawers, centers of action, and the bottoms of hearts. My other ancestors, a captain in Washington's army, a secretary to Lincoln, and Daniel Boone himself. My grandfathers were bankers, and so was my father, but my mother wanted me to become a surgeon. However, one night, when I was 3 years old, I was awakened by a glittering stranger who told me I was a poet and always would be, and never to fear being alone or being laughed at. That was my first meeting with my angel, who is the most interesting poet I've ever met.
Well, there you go. There's James Broughton, folks. I watched the film. I guess you called it a movie. I call it a film.
Film.
Same thing?
Big Joy, The Adventures of James Broughton.
Yeah.
Same thing.
So I watched this when I was down in Arizona visiting my dad, and it is just... Okay. A lot of documentaries, especially nowadays, they tend to have sort of like almost a harsh edge to them. Like there's a, you know, some wrong that's being discussed, or there's some issue that's being raised or whatever. This was such a pleasant documentary. It was real and honest about some of the hardships and the themes we're going to get into. But at the same time, the entire experience was just lyrical, I think.
Mm. And his life and work was lyrical. We were trying to make a film that was not imitative of him, but was inspired by his work. So when we were making the film, we would often start out by reading one of his poems.
Right. Or think to yourself, what's that thing, you know, people say, like, you know, well, what would Santa do? What would Jesus do? It's like, okay, well, what would James Broughton do?
We did wonder about that, you know. And one of his mantras was, follow your own weird.
Right. We were talking about that at the coffee shop. So when you mentioned that, even before we discussed the root of it, for me, so W-Y-R-D, I think, is one of the Celtic spellings. And tell us a little bit about what James Broughton meant when he chose that word weird.
Well, he was a lover of language. And so he knew that weird came from a Celtic root that means fate or destiny. So to say, follow your own weird, to me, means be true to your core, to your fate, to your why you're here on the planet.
Right.
And at the same time, to be on your creative edge.
Well, yeah, and to follow your destiny. I mean, oh, follow your destiny. It's become almost blasé, but, you know, follow your own weird, especially given that he was grappling with gender issues at a time where, you know, it's challenging now, but it was far more challenging then, especially, as you said, during the MacArthur era. Well, let's see. So that is one of the themes. I guess you could say he was at the cusp of exploration.
He was. I mean, he was in a period where he was exploring his sexuality. He was exploring all kinds of social issues at a time when it wasn't okay to talk about things like homosexuality or even the fact that you might feel like a man if you're a woman, or you might feel like a woman if you're a man. Those issues that are now coming to the fore in our culture.
Right. And what did you say that he wanted to encourage men to explore their inner femininity and women their inner masculinity?
Exactly.
What do you think caused him to want to encourage that?
Well, he felt this inner feminine that he spent a lot of his life exploring. Why is it that I feel this? And he also had this concept of the God body, the idea that our bodies are temples and that we should learn from and explore and worship our own as well as others' bodies. And so the idea that there was as much sensation in his nipples as there was in his penis was really interesting to him.
So he was sort of going in the direction that was opposite of the sort of maybe Protestant, Stoic, you know, Catholic, whatever. I mean, there's entire realms of thought in the world where there's fear of the sensations of the body. And it sounds like he was saying, well, why would God have given us this body with these sensations if there wasn't a purpose for them?
Exactly. And then he also felt this connection to nature that you know, that things are as important to learn from as other live beings. So he would go out in nature, and in fact, in one of his films and one of his books, he literally makes love to Mother Earth. So there's this really interesting exploration.
Right. Well, I remember the bed.
Oh, yes.
That's a really cute one. Tell our listening audience a little bit about that movie. And
Bed is a film made in the summer of love in 1967 in a place called Druid Heights, which was where Alan Watts and a bunch of his friends lived. And so there are all these hippies from San Francisco who came together. And James had been thinking about this for decades. I found in his archive notes on the idea of the bed from the 50s. But the movie didn't get made until 67.
Right.
And it was released in 68. It was his most popular film. And it's all about the different things that can happen on a bed.
Right. Yeah. And so the it was funny. There's that film that I remember from childhood that other people may have seen. Something about a little, it's a red balloon.
Yes.
Okay. Is that even the title of it?
The Red Balloon. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So So, you know, that little balloon that just sort of floats around everywhere, you know? And so at the beginning of the bed, it's so cute because, of course, I remember the narration of the movie as they were introducing it. But at one point, I thought it was literally going to be just a bed roaming around the hills with no humans in the film at all.
That's how it starts out.
Going down the hill. Do-do-do-do-do-do.
And there's actually no words in that film. It's just music. Mm-hmm. And then all these different things happen. And he did write a poem called The Song of the Bed, which goes, everything important in life occurs upon a bed. It's where you cry when you were born and where you lie mm-hmm. when dead.
Oh.
You spend a third of your life in bed with sickness, sex, and sleeping. You can have a good laugh with your love in bed, though it's also used for weeping. In a bed, right. The most fantastic things are hoped for and conceived. It's where you dream. It's where you scheme. It's where you are deceived. It's where on earth you come to birth and most of childhood spend. It's where you come and where you don't and where you come to an end.
Oh, my gosh.
So that poem is so typical of Broughton. It includes humor.
Yep.
Kind of all these contradictions and opposites.
Play on words.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? It's very accessible.
That is so true. I think that's a lot of the people we interviewed said that about his poetry. One person said it's like Dr. Seuss for adults.
Right, right. I mean, seriously, like, you know, I mean, that's not that hard to memorize. It's very hilarious, actually, and yet deeply insightful at the same time. I could imagine if you were at a party and somehow came up and you're like, da-da-da-da. Like if there's 10 people in that room, all 10 of them are going to get something different out of that poem. Some are going to turn thoughtful. Some are going to be rolling on the ground laughing, you know, but because he's going so many places and so few words, very good use of words.
Mm. And it's a 20-minute film that we're actually putting up on our website so people can see it for like $1.99 or something like that. So.
Wait, what? What's the, you mean this film?
This film, The Bed.
Oh, The Bed. You're also putting The Bed up.
Yeah, we're going to put The Bed up. We're going to try to put all of James Broughton's films
up. That's brilliant.
So they can be accessed by people.
Oh, that's wonderful. So a person can go ahead and pick up Big Joy. And what it felt like to me, and you mentioned when we were talking earlier that this was your intention, so I'll tell you right now, you succeeded. What it felt like to me when I watched the movie was that my curiosity and interest had been sparked, and now I wanted to know more. It's almost as if it's an invitation to the full breadth of what he offered the world during his life. And the movie just serves to invite you, open a bunch of doors, and then you get to jump through and decide where you want to go.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk real quick about the website. Okay, folks, this will be pretty easy to remember. Bigjoy.org. Yeah. And it is really cool. So I was sort of laughing earlier because, let's see here. Okay, I'm looking at it on my computer. And this is so cute. I was like, do-do-do-do-do. I said I would do that. So when you move your mouse around, this little laser follows you and you get to decide, like, I don't want to be weird. I'm not sure I will try anything. So it's like follow your own weird. And then you zip around to different places. And these beautiful, unique images pop up. And it is very, what's the word? Interactive.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. Like I'm thinking about answering this one, but I'll do that later after the interview. So let's see. Bigjoy.org is really just the entry point to a lot of things. You said you're going to actually have more of his films up later.
Yep. You can see our film there. You can watch the trailer. You can see his films. We have lots of his poetry
mm-hmm.
and lots of stories, little essays that other people have written about their experiences with him.
Aww.
Press quotes, people who saw the movie and, you know, what the critics said.
Right, right. You guys are really keeping James alive.
That's our goal. That's our hope.
Well, tell us a little bit about that, because when you were mentioning earlier about this team of people that came together from multiple countries and yet sort of a core here on Vashon, it sounds like, and they spent 4+ years, obviously, because you're still now in the process of bringing it to the public. tell us what, I mean, wow, that's a huge thing to do. Tell us why.
Well, when I met James, he was the most lively 75-year-old I'd ever met. And I thought, wow, what would it be like to be that alive as a 75-year-old? And I was so fortunate to be living close to him. It was 2 hours from my house to his house in Port Townsend for the last 10 years of his life. So I would go over and spend time with him and his partner, Joel. And he just became a real source of inspiration to me on so many levels, as he has for many, many other people.
Mm-hmm.
So as I said, after he passed on, I thought, what can we do? He's not that well known, partly because he did lots of different kinds of work, different kinds of poetry, different kinds of films. You can't put him into any one cubbyhole.
Right. He didn't focus on one specific genre area in order to,
He was a Renaissance man. Ideas. Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. So
it took us 4.5 years.
Yeah.
And our team, we had our cinematographer in Victoria, our co-director in Portland, our editors in San Francisco. We had a producer in Mexico, and we worked really, and an animator in Vancouver. I mean, and our composer, Jamie, lives in Santa Fe now.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like working together for all these years to try to create something that really communicated the essence of James Broughton.
Right. And just one more example, really, of how technology, modern technology, can be used for wonderful good. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes when we look at the negative damage that's being caused by technology, I mean, you know, yeah, everyone's sort of familiar with that. You know, I oftentimes, especially young people, you know, the teenagers of today right now seem to be feeling pretty a little bit of hopeless, a little bit of depressed, a little bit of frustrated, you know, really worried. And it's like trying to find a way to point out to them that it's not all bad, you know, that there is also some good in there. And so it's a matter of endlessly transitioning our society, our way of life, our thinking towards move away from that, which is the bad, now that we can see it. Because some things, you know, when someone invented the first boat that could go out and catch a whole bunch of fish really quickly, they just thought that was great. They didn't realize the long-term damage, right?
Right.
So anyways, I love that so many people so far away were able to collaborate on this project together. How did you guys sort of do that? I mean, just all on the internet sending stuff, or did you guys actually meet physically sometimes?
We met physically as often as we could. But without Skype, it would have been really difficult to do this because we were looking at the daily edits that were being done over Skype.
Right.
So we were able to see and give feedback and kind of co-create what the final film looked like.
Oh, yeah. Skype's brilliant. Okay. Thank you for sharing a little bit of the background into what went into this. I mean, like a novel takes multiple years, right? And now we have this beautiful film.
And the DVD has about an hour's worth of extra stuff that we had to cut out of the film, or that we decided, oh, we really need to tell this story. So the DVD has, and those are also available on our website, those extras.
Right. Oh, right. As the separate things that you can like live stream or like stream online.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, doke. So I'm going to do a really quick station identification. If you're just joining us, I am Marge Swisdale, producer and host of Prose, Poetry, and Purpose. Today, I'm talking with Stephen Silla, producer and co-director for The Big Joy, a documentary film which explores and celebrates the life of filmmaker, poet, and Big Joy advocate, James Broughton. So VOV in particular is supported by Shot Ridge Studios, doing business as Raven's Nest, an authentic gallery collection of Northwest Coast native arts and gifts featuring contemporary and traditional Tlingit art created by Israel Shot Ridge, located across the street from the Saturday Market in downtown Vashon and always open during the first Friday gallery cruise. So thank you, Raven's Nest, for helping to make VOV possible. Okay, so let's see here real quick. I want to make sure that we don't forget to mention the Big Joy will be broadcast by KCTS Channel 9 in June.
That is so exciting. We're offering it to public television stations all over the country. And KCTS was one of the first to want to screen the film because they knew about it from SIFF, Seattle International Film Festival, where it showed in 2013, and it actually won the Real Northwest Award, which is an award they give for the best film made in the Northwest.
Right, right, right. So that's Real as in R-E-E-L. Lovely. Correct. Little play on words. But no, that is actually super exciting. And you know, I think 2013, I'm wondering if that was 3 years ago. Okay, that was a year after I think my son's film was at SIFF. I was wondering, wouldn't it have been funny if it was the same year?
That would have been amazing.
Oh my gosh, that would have been cool. Okay, doke. So, so folks, what you can do is right now while we're conducting this interview, we don't yet have a date. But if you go to bigjoy.org and you check in, you said there was a specific section on the website that would talk about when it's going to, that would give the date?
There is. There's a new thing about what's coming up.
Okay.
So...
perfect. So on the website, you can find out the day and the time.
Now Showing, I believe it's called.
Right. That's what you said earlier. Yeah. So look for Now Showing at bigjoy.org and just track that. And you will find the date and the time on KCTS. And you can watch Big Joy at home with your family.
At least a shortened version of it. Yeah.
Oh, right. How much did they shorten it?
Well, the broadcast version is 54 minutes.
That's not bad.
And the full movie is 82 minutes.
Yeah. It's so fascinating. I really think it's interesting how truly he seems to have I guess it's true for maybe most people, but James Broughton, the young man, I mean, talk about a gorgeous person. Oh, he's beautiful. And then James Broughton in the middle years, and it's really interesting to suddenly see the shift that occurs as sort of the wear and tear of life, but also the experience and the wisdom are starting to come together. And then, which is on the picture here, this is my favorite picture of him, honestly. So this is James Brown, probably, I would say, late 60s?
Yes.
Yeah. And he's standing with his arms out and a giant smile on his face. When was that picture taken? Is there a story behind that picture?
Yeah, it was taken at some Zen event that was organized in San Francisco, and he was just exulting.
Right.
You can actually find quite a few pictures of him with his arms spread and giving joy.
Right.
One of his publishers gave him that name, Big Joy, and said, you know, when you walk into a room, it's just like the whole room lights up. And so he started calling him Big Joy. And in the latter part of his life, James took on that name and kind of used it as his own moniker. And wrote a couple of books, one called Big Joy and one called Little Prayers to Big Joy's Mother.
Oh, right. He had an interesting relationship with his mother.
He did. That was a lifetime challenge for him.
Right. Well... he's pretty normal then, right? You know, family dynamics, I tell you. Okie doke. So let's see here then. Yes, you are also a journalist.
It's true.
I know. Does it make you nervous to acknowledge this at times?
Well, sometimes. Sometimes I call myself a recovering journalist.
Right.
But I've written for publications ranging from the Christian Science Monitor to the Vashon Beachcomber.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a great
and beyond
career. Oh yeah,
right.
And beyond.
So you have a nonprofit right now
called Journalism That Matters.
Right.
Which is a think tank on the future of journalism that we started. Right. I started with two other journalists and an organizational change consultant in 2001.
Okay.
And over the years, we've had about 19 gatherings where we bring together people from print, broadcast, new media.
Right.
And we deal with questions like, how do we support journalism that matters in the future?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a great website that you can explore that, journalismthatmatters.net.
Ooh, yay. Okay, cool. I can't wait. I want to type that down right now in my notes, but I can't reach the keyboard. Okay, awesome. So let me ask you then. when it comes to journalism, well, I mean, what do you think is sort of going wrong in the world of journalism? What would you like to see the purpose of journalism become? I mean, there's some good journalism out there.
There's some great journalism out there. The Pulitzer Prizes were just announced, and there are some amazing pieces of journalism still being done.
Yeah.
But I do worry about the corporate control of the media. And so we're trying to stimulate all kinds of individual independent journalism and trying to find new sources of funding for that.
Mm-hmm.
From places like businesses that are corporate, have corporate social responsibility as part of their triple bottom line. And so we're also encouraging journalists to be more interactive and to allow more other people to tell their stories. One day I was going to...
So for example, I interviewed a journalist who wrote for Playboy magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that one of the highlights of writing for Playboy was that they actually allow he had interviewed Bernie Sanders for Playboy magazine.
Wow.
And he, his name is Jonathan Tessini, and he wrote The Essential Bernie Sanders, which is a book that he wrote in literally a month because it's essentially a compilation of quotes from Bernie Sanders largely. It's very much him in his own words, right?
Cool.
But what he said was unique, and I didn't know this because I was like, Playboy, why would you know? And he said what's unique about Playboy is that they allow the person being interviewed to basically control the what comes out in the journalistic piece or the interview. It's like it's their own words.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in a lot of other magazines, you interview someone, you take away what you take away from it, and then you go rewrite your own opinion about what you took away, and it's really your words, not the person who you were interviewed. Is that accurate?
That is usually true, and that's why we're trying to stimulate a new way of telling stories where one of the themes is nothing about us without us. So if you're writing about Vashon Island people would have an influence in the story that's being told.
Oh, that'd be so nice.
Another one
right.
is speak truth to empower. So
right.
you try to think about a way to allow people to tell to speak their truth and to give right. them more power by speaking their own truth. So,
right.
you know, James Broughton, when I was going to the Seattle Times to do a little thing on the future of journalism, and I said, James, what should I say to the journalists? And he said, well, you can just read my poem, What Matters. And it goes, what matters, matters, but it doesn't. Some of the time, everything matters. Much of the time, nothing matters. In the long run, both everything and nothing matter a lot. So he kind of takes the poet's
I know,
overview,
right.
the big picture.
I could just see the journalists going there, scratching their head and going, okay, now what do I do with that? Like, yeah, that's nice, but hello.
Actually, one of the editors hung it up on his wall.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm not surprised.
To try to remind him and his journalists that there's a bigger perspective.
Well, okay, it sounds like you have sort of, you had phrases. What were the first one was about letting people speak for themselves.
Yeah, nothing about us without us.
Okay. So the nothing about us without us. I mean, that is alone right there. If everyone who is going to do journalism simply adhered to that, it is allowing people to self-label rather than external label. I mean, you know, the change that would occur if you were allowing people to speak for themselves rather than speaking for them from you. It's amazing. I love that. That is so how much success are you having?
This has just come out in the last year, and the think tank's been going for 12 years or more than that, like 15 or 16 years.
Right.
So this is just beginning to emerge, but there are some great examples. There's a thing called the Listening Post in Macon, Georgia, where they're asking people, what are the questions you'd like dealt with?
Right.
So people are actually asking their own questions instead of having a journalist ask the questions.
This is sort of like what I'm doing actually with the Millennial Show.
that.
Where I'm allowing people in the millennial generation to raise what they want to talk about. And I'm getting millennials to be the host. So I thought, I don't want some person who's Generation X interviewing millennials. And because it's a disconnect.
Well, another idea is listening is our superpower. How do you imagine if journalists really knew how to listen and considered that their superpower? Wow.
Oh, yeah. Instead of writing something juicy that will sell papers is my superpower. So what can I pull out of this that will inflame it and make it interesting? Which I think may be the mantra in the back of a lot of journalists' head.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to pull together another, let's have him do another one of his poems.
Yeah, let's have James read.
So we're going to do number 18, I think.
The Ode to Gaiety.
Yay!
And, you know, when he talked about gaiety, he meant it in a universal way, as you'll hear.
Oh, right, I know. Yeah, I have a friend named Gay. You know, it's like, yeah, the use of that word, the definition of the word has definitely altered over time. Okie doke, here we go.
Ode to Gaiety. Go, gloom, be gone, glum and grim, off with drab, drear, and grumble. It's time, it's past time, to come undone and come out laughing. Time to wrap killjoys in wet blankets and feed them to the sourpusses. Come, frisky pals, come forth, wily wags, loosen your screws and get off your rocker. Untie the straight lacer, tie up the smarty pants, tickle the cross patch with Josh and Guffaw, share quips and pranks with every victim of grouch, pomposity, or blah. Woe to the bozo who says no to tee-hee, ho-ho, and ha-ha. Boo to the clean-cut klutz who wipes the smile off his face. Without gaiety, freedom is a chastity belt. Without gaiety, life is a wooden kimono. Come, cheerful chums, cut up and carry on. Crack your pots and split your sides. Boggle the bellyacher, convulse the worrywart, pratfall the prissy-poos and the fuddy-duds. Take drollery to heart or end up a deadhead at the guillotine of the mindless. Be wise and go merry round whatever you cherish and what you love to enjoy, what you live to exert. And when the high spirits call your number up, count on merriment all the way to the countdown. Long live hilarity, euphoria, and flummadiddle. Long live gaiety for all the laity.
He loved to play with words.
He makes poetry fun. And not all poets do that. You know, some of them are more somber, or they're this or they're that. I could honestly go to an awesome pub in San Francisco and sit back and just listen to him read for half an hour, whatever. And I'd be just delighted.
He had many readings there. And Alan Watts called him the unofficial poet laureate of San Francisco.
Well, and talk about Dr. Seuss for adults. That's exactly what it sounds like. Wow. Okay, so that is from the original motion picture soundtrack. You know, it's really impressive what you guys have pulled together. A film, a soundtrack, a website. Thank you for doing this.
You're welcome. And t-shirts that say, when in doubt, twirl.
Exactly. There you go. I you know what? If I start twirling around on Vashon, I guess I will just look normal. So that was Ode to Gaiety, number 18. There's like, oh gosh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's like 8 or 9 poems from him on here.
Yeah. And he also invented a kind of poetry called the high cuckoo.
Oh my
God. Which was a cuckoo haiku. And there's one in the film that I'll just read it. It says, I may be infecting the whole body, said the head, but they'll never amputate me.
All right. All right. Okay. And on that note, really quickly, I'm going to go ahead and remind all of our new listeners who have just jumped in their car and they're headed off somewhere and they've flipped on the radio, and of course, your radio is automatically set to 101.9 FM because, well, where else would you want to be? So let's give some thanks here. VOV is supported by our Community Credit Union, personal, professional, and full-service, member-focused, and community-based, conveniently located across from Thriftway at OURCU.com. Yay! And, of course, we never can forget the delicious yumminess of Snapdragon Bakery and Cafe, who also give VOV support. Pastries in the morning, vegetarian lunches, wine and music at night fill the friendly, casual atmosphere that is Snapdragon on Vashon Highway at the south end of Vashon Town.
That place is really happening.
Oh,
have you seen that new bar?
You know, I actually haven't been in to see that. Mm. I usually go right in for the pastries that are covered in delicious fresh fruit creams and chocolate. And then usually I run out screaming before I buy too much, right? With my little pink box. Oh, we got it was a rhubarb, berry, blueberry, strawberry, thingamajigger, apple pie. And the crust on top of that thing was like a giant spaceship that had just descended, covered in cinnamon sugar and dripping over the edges. And yum.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, I love Snapdragon. But you know, honestly, this is so cool. If you are listening from abroad across the world, then come visit Vashon. If you're living on Vashon, you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. My 14-year-old son in the back of the car the other day made some comment about why things are so great on Vashon in town. And he said, well, it's because most of the businesses are family owned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. He's got three friends whose families own restaurants in town.
Wow.
You know, I mean, he was over at the Green Ginger on the day they were closed with his friend, and he's inside and the doors are all locked, but the whole family's in there and they're all like folding napkins and doing that, you know, and there he is just around this giant Chinese family dinner type of environment. Where else does that happen?
That's pretty great.
Yeah, I love Vashon. Okay, so we are going to run out of time here. We want to make sure we cover everything. Themes. We talked about gender. James Broughton experienced the full range. It sounds like he went as a child, if I understand correctly. His family became aware of his inner femininity and really worked against it, you know?
Yes. His mother docked money from his allowance if he acted effeminate.
And then he moved into his adulthood and he had an incredibly wonderful, beautiful, long-lasting relationship with a man named Kermit.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about Kermit.
Kermit Sheets was his collaborator, made a lot of his early movies with him.
Mm-hmm.
And they worked together well into the 70s after he got married to a woman.
Right. So they left America during the McCarthy period.
That's right.
And there was a woman,
Anna Halperin.
Anna Halperin was the one, I think, in the interview that mentioned she sort of assumed that James and Kermit were together. But at that time, if you think about, you know, people smoking in airplanes, 50s, you know, that time, two men who spent a lot of time together would be sort of politely recognized as being a couple, but not publicly outed or acknowledged that way because it was too dangerous.
People didn't talk about it. And
right.
you could lose your job. You could be arrested
right.
at gay bars in the 50s and early 60s.
So then they chose to leave, as I guess McCarthyism was really just sort of making it a crushing experience to live in California.
And James was being asked to testify against his friends. And he said, I'm out of here.
I'm out of here. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they went to England and France, did a bunch of cool stuff there. And that's where James achieved quite a success.
He
Tell
made
us
a movie
a
called The Pleasure Garden in the ruins right. of the Crystal Palace in London. And that movie was the official entry in the Cannes Film Festival in 1954 from England.
Wow.
And it won this special award that Jean Cocteau presented to him, the prize for poetic film.
Right. So that means that in England, of all the films that were presented, England had to decide his film was the one to send to Cannes. Wait,
That's
is that
right.
you pronounce it? Can?
Can. Can. Can.
Con.
Yeah.
Okay.
Most people pronounce it can.
And then when they created the poetic, wasn't that actually a new award that they created specifically?
It was.
Like, it was such an amazing film that they had to make sure it got an award. They created a new award category.
Prix de fantasy poétique.
And that still exists as a category?
It doesn't. It was only given that one year.
That's even more special.
Yeah, we actually tried to get Cannes to show our film in 2013 and recreate that award.
Oh.
But that didn't happen.
Well, try again. Right? So, and then the Jean Cocteau. Jean Cocteau.
Who was one of Broughton's heroes, French filmmaker, artist, presented the award to him.
And didn't he jokingly say something
about...
He kissed
him on both cheeks and said, how wonderful, a French film made by an American in England.
Right. I love it. Okay, so then he comes back to America and had an opportunity to actually, like a Hollywood place said, we want you to produce like a big Hollywood American movie. And he basically said no.
He decided that he remembered his angel had told him that he was a poet. And so the idea of getting into the business of Hollywood was not at all appealing to him.
I imagine someone with his spirit would have been sort of crushed and miserable in that environment.
He knew that.
Yeah.
So he actually stopped making films and went back to poetizing, as he said.
Mm-hmm.
And until somebody sent him some raw film and he made The Bed. And that got him back into film. And he made many more films after that.
Right. So when he came back, after he and Kermit ended their relationship, he had a really hard, deep, depressed sort of period he went through. And he was still really grappling with gender.
Yeah, he was in therapy with a Jungian therapist.
Right.
And he somehow, as he told me, I needed to fill out my mandala and I felt like I needed to marry a woman.
Right. And they were saying that'll make a man of you, I think.
Yeah,
was the
exactly.
Idea.
Exactly.
And he was friends, right? I mean, he had an authentic, loving relationship with the woman he married.
They were both Jungians and they were great.
Didn't she do
playmates.
Art? She did clothing.
Yeah,
she did the clothing, right?
Costume maker.
Costume, and, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we got to interview her for the film, which I think is one of the most poignant moments of the film, where she talks about how she never really got over his leaving her.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she seemed very still emotional in the interview. But he did. He ended up, and it's really, I think it's very interesting, Joel, who was, and this is the third theme we were going to touch on, the idea that you can find true love at any age.
Yes. Joel Singer was one of his students at the San Francisco Art Institute, where he was teaching film. And
Joel knew about him in advance.
Joel,
right?
Had,
he
had
literally
visited
went
the school
there
in advance and felt like he needed to be around this person.
Right. Right.
And they ended up falling in love. And Joel tells the story really beautifully in our film.
Yeah. We won't give anything away.
But the idea is that you can find true love at any age.
And Joel was
35
younger.
Years younger than James.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
We have a wonderful scene where we go back and forth between James's journals, Joel's interviews, and the interview with Susanna.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get all three voices.
Yeah. And that was the true, I mean, what, they were together for 25 years until James passed away?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I mean, you know, it's not just our modern culture, because you look back throughout history and it's always been, you know, young girls in their early teens that were being haremed off or married off or whatever to men in their 40s type of thing. So, you know, it's like the worship of youthfulness, I think, has some real biological imperatives and control-based issues. And there's all sorts of reasons for it. But what I like about that aspect coming through in the film is that it is true. I mean, love, the feelings you have when you fall in love with someone, have virtually nothing to do with what the person actually looks like.
It's true.
You know, I mean, how many people out there listening right now had a friend who they were just friends with and they never would have thought was even good looking, and then one day there's a subtle shift and suddenly they're beautiful, you
that
know
happens
and
to me a lot. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, bam, over that, the everything's changed. So why would age prevent people from being able to fall in love?
There's a wonderful poem called Wondrous the Merge that James wrote about that whole relationship with Joel. And if it's not up on our website now, it will be soon.
Especially now you've been reminded of it.
Yeah.
You're like, I got to make sure that was up
Wondrous
there.
Wondrous the Merge.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, honestly, this is, I would say everyone out there who has anyone in their 50s through their 70s who experienced personally the, sexual revolution, what else do you want to call it? The summer of love type of, you know, that whole awakening period, right? You know, anyone who wants a fantabulous, you know, dance down memory lane, this is a great
way
to do that.
Well, yeah, the film kind of traverses the McCarthy era, the mm-hmm. post-war era, the hippie era.
Yeah.
And the gay liberation. So you can kind of take this journey through the 20th century through the life of James Broughton.
Okie doke.
Is there time to read?
Yes, though, there absolutely is. So hold on. So let's see. Bigjoy.org. Very fun website to play around with. Look for KCTS Channel 9 in June to offer, what do they call it, screening or viewing? Or they broadcast. There we go. Broadcasting, Big Joy. And we do have, so this right here is, there's a little tiny book that comes in the original motion picture soundtrack. And it has the poems, you know, written down, the ones that he reads out loud, along with some of really nice pictures. And at the very end, it has a poet's creed. So I'm going to go ahead and ask Stephen Silla, the producer and co-director of Big Joy, to read that for us.
A poet's creed from the preface to his anthology, Special Deliveries. A poet has to allow everything to happen to him, or he can make nothing happen for others. A poet has to let go in order to hold on. Poetry, like love and religion, is a glorious conjunction of sense and nonsense. Without joy, there is no wonder. Without wonder, there is no magic. Without magic, there is no poem. I don't really know anything unless I can feel it. If I like what it does, I go where it takes me. I say only what it tells me, and I try to stand by it. If I like what it does, I go where it takes me. And I don't have to believe it if I know that I know. The message from my angel repeats over and over, attain the inevitable. Allness is ripe.
Attain the inevitable. Allness is ripe. Yeah, really. I mean, just what a great guy. You know, and not in a shallow, life was always great way either.
No, he was able to plumb the depths of depression, and his poems try to bring together the yeses and noes of life.
Right. Yeah, we don't have time for that, but there is that really cute one. So what's the title of that one?
That one's actually called I Heard in the Shell.
Oh, I Heard in the Shell.
Yeah.
It was short. Go for it. Yeah, yeah.
I heard in the shell all the hymns of hell. I heard all the angels crying. I heard the earth in pangs of birth and all the galaxies dying. I heard in the shell the resounding well of all humanity's voices. I heard every shout of laughter and doubt in the crashing war of choices. I heard in the shell the throb of each cell from flower and rock and feather. But loudest of all rang the quiet call of yes and no singing together.
Oh, that's awesome. that picture, there's the picture in the movie of him with the giant, it's a conch shell,
yes,
isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly, yes.
And he's listening, yeah, and they didn't explain anything around it, it was just one of the images.
It's true.
Yay! Oh,
it's
gosh.
From one of his films where he's listening in the shell.
Yeah. You know, he was lucky to walk the beaches of California before they were denuded of their shells and their bones. And I mean, as a little child in the 70s, I can remember all that you found. Yeah, he got to see such beauty.
He did. He was a quintessential Californian.
Yeah. Okay. And that is our show, folks. Stephen, thank you very much.
Thank you, March. This has just been delightful.
Yeah, I agree. So my name is March Twisdale. You've been listening to my interview with Stephen Silla on Prose, Poetry, and Purpose, where my guest writers share how they hope to inspire positive change in the world, one reader, one listener, and one viewer at a time. If you're curious to learn more about James Broughton's life and work, you can peruse a display copy of The Big Joy at the PP&P stand at the Vashon Bookshop here on the island, or visit Stephen Silla's website at bigjoy.org. And now I'll leave you with the inspirational and timely song, We Are the Many, created by musical activist Makana.
Ye come here, gather round the stage. The time has come for us to voice our rage against the ones who've trapped us in a cage to steal from us the value of our wage from underneath the vestiture of law. The lobbyists at Washington do gnaw at liberty, the bureaucrats guffaw. And until they are purged, we won't withdraw. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. Our nation was built upon the right of every person to improve their plight. The laws of this republic they rewrite, and now a few own everything in sight. They own it free of liability. They own that they are not like you and me. Their influence dictates legality. And until they are stopped, we are not free. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. You enforce your monopolies with guns while sacrificing our daughters and sons. But certain things belong to everyone. Your thievery has left the people none. So take heed of our notice to redress. We had little to lose, we must confess. Your empty words do leave us unimpressed. A growing number join us in protest. We occupy the streets, we occupy the courts, we occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. You can't divide us into sides and from a gaze you cannot hide. Denial serves to amplify, and our allegiance you can't buy. Our government is not for sale. The banks do not deserve a bail. We will not reward those who fail. We will not move till we prevail. We'll occupy the streets. We'll occupy the courts. We'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. We'll occupy the streets. We'll occupy the courts. We'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. We are the many. You are the few.